Recently, Ames was ranked the number 2 college town in the U.S. Close behind, Iowa City, coming in at number 4. What goes into making a great college town? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we talk with several guests about the attributes of great college towns. Also, what sets them apart from other communities? What special challenges do they face? And how have they changed? A reminder, less than 24 hours of our spring pledge drive are left. Have you shown your support? Go to iowapublicradio.org and join our discussion with your favorite college town memories after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Recently, the American Institute of Economic Research's College Destination Index compiled its annual list of the best college cities and towns in the U.S. There were several categories, 4 as a matter of fact: major metros, mid-size metros, small metros, and college towns. Now, in the category of college towns, described as communities with less than 250,000 residents, Ames and Iowa City were in the top 5, Ames ranking at number 2 and Iowa City at number 4. So this hour, we want to ask, what goes into making a great college town? Also, what sets them apart from other communities? What special challenges do they face? How have they changed? We want you, our listeners, to join in our conversation this hour. And in particular, answer this question. Have you had an experience where you've ever said to yourself, only in a college town? That could happen only in a college town, for better or for worse. Tell us about that experience. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, you can tweet us at IPRTalk or post something on our Facebook page. Joining us, first of all, Blake Gumprecht is with us by phone, an associate professor and chair of the Department of Geography at the University of New Hampshire. He is the author of The American College Town from 2008. He wrote the book on college towns, so to speak. Blake Gumprecht, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit. I don't know how much you know about specifically about Ames and Iowa City, but tell us a little bit about what college towns have going for them.
Well, I have actually been to both Ames and Iowa City. Iowa City I'm more familiar with than Ames. When I talk about college towns, I'm talking about places that are fundamentally different because of their very different demographics. You have in college towns lots of people 18 to 21 years old in their college years, and you also have an unusual density of highly educated adults, professors and researchers and whatnot. And because you have that kind of skewed demographics, that changes the nature of the town in multiple ways, because you don't have those concentrations of young people and highly educated adults in other places. So it impacts the business life of the town, it impacts the politics, it impacts the cultural attractions you usually have in places like that. It runs the gamut in terms of its influences, and it makes college towns, in my view, very different places than other types of cities and towns.
Tell us a little bit about how it impacts business life in more detail.
Well, if you think about the business district of the downtown of an Iowa City or an Ames, and you walk up and down those streets, and if you do this in college towns all over the country, you'll start to notice a kind of similarity to the business mix, but it's different than the business mix you might get in a non-college town. So you'll have more bars. That's a pretty obvious thing. You'll have more pizza parlors. You'll have more bookstores. You maybe are more likely to have an art gallery where you wouldn't have one in another smaller urban place. So these are the ways in which the interests of those young people and the interests of the highly educated adults are sort of reflected in the business mix. So that's one way in which it impacts the business side of things.
You have touched on in your book, The American College Town, the fact that the college towns are largely an American phenomena. Why is that?
Well, there's a few different reasons. Some of the reasons are historical. Are the sequence in which colleges and cities developed was different here than in Europe? In Europe, cities were in place before the first universities came into being, so they naturally sort of gravitated towards cities because that's where the scholars went and the students followed them. Here, a lot of colleges were founded before there was significant urban development in an area, and so there wasn't the sort of natural implication that, oh, we're going to put the University of Iowa in Des Moines, or we're going to put Iowa State in another place. Another fact that's made the situation different in this country is it's a big country, and we have 50 states, and every state has a separate system of higher education, and so that's led to a multiplication of colleges. We simply have more of them, and so that means that there's a greater chance that there'll be more college towns. Another reason is if you look through the history of college founding in this country, just like cities and towns today will compete to be the place where a big factory or high-tech company moves to. Back in the 1800s, cities and towns competed to be the place where you located a university. And oftentimes, the people who decided those things, state legislators and whatnot, didn't necessarily look at what the best place would be for a college. They often were wooed by the wooers and who offered the most. And so a lot of colleges were put in smaller places simply because people from those places successfully lobbied for it. So
we're looking at what makes college towns great, what makes them different. Join our conversation. Have you ever had an experience and then said to yourself, only in a college town, for better or worse? Join our conversation with your experience, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Blake Gumprecht, author of The American College Town, did you also look at the drawbacks of living in a college town?
Well, sure. There is a chapter in my book on what's called town-gown relations, which look at the frictions that exist between colleges and the surrounding community, between students and permanent residents. Because of the presence of a big dominant institution like a University of Iowa, because the presence of so many 18 to 21 year olds, that naturally creates some frictions. You know, as anybody knows, people when they're in their college years don't necessarily behave like people who aren't. And so student drinking and other behavioral issues are constant problems in college towns and have been for as long as there's been college towns. I mean, just the different lifestyles that students lead often gets under the skin of the older permanent residents of the town. But there's also tensions that relate to the fact that you have this big dominant institution, and sometimes people in a college town feel like the college or university will do and does anything they want and don't really care what the local community thinks. So, yeah, there's some negatives that come along with the many benefits of living in a college town.
Unlike other towns without colleges, college towns have large populations, Blake, that come and go. They are mm-hmm. transient. They are seasonal. Mm-hmm. What impact does that have on a community?
Well, I think it creates a kind of interesting process of change throughout the year, and I talk a little bit about that in the introduction to my book. You know, as somebody who's lived in college towns all 12 months, college towns are very different places, say, in summertime when most of the students are gone, and, you know, the grass on the rental houses grows long because nobody's there to take care of them. Faculty may be off doing research as well, so they become very different, and in some ways appealingly tranquil places in mm-hmm. the summer. You get that kind of effect as well over holiday breaks on a more short-term basis. But even that's a little bit different in some way because the sort of people that leave at Christmas are not necessarily the same people that leave over summer. So that cyclical nature I find very interesting about college towns. There's very much a calendar. You know, if you live in a college town, you know, come late August, the U-Haul vans descend on the town, and suddenly there's more beer cans beside the side of the road, and you hear the pounding bass off in the distance a little bit more often. You know, you see right. the people doing the various fraternity and sorority rituals and things like that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of the interesting aspects of the transience, I think.
And you mentioned rentals there. That really shapes the economy of a college town doesn't, because you have all these rentals available and then a community of landlords.
It is, and it not only affects the economy, but that's very much an issue with the town-gown relations that I was referring to. Certainly that brings in a lot of money in the town, but the friction over where students live and where they don't, where they should be allowed to live and where they aren't, is a constant problem. I mean, most people don't want to live around student housing for the behavioral reasons we've talked about, and so there's a lot of conflict between landlords and city officials, between landlords and local residents, and things such as that. So it's certainly an economic, an important part of the economy of college towns, but it has broader implications too, because it does play into the political issues.
Blake Gumprecht is at the University of New Hampshire, the author of the 2008 book, The American College Town. Also joining us in this discussion of what separates college towns from other towns, John Solo is with us in our Iowa City studio. He's the Department Executive Officer, Professor in the Department of Economics at the University of Iowa. John Solo, welcome to our program.
Happy to be here.
We want to hone in on the economic aspects of college towns with you. Tell us about that. How are they set apart economically?
Well, actually, I think Blake hit on one of the important things, is that these are towns that have highly educated people, and highly educated people tend to be paid well, and so they also tend to be fairly high income locations. Also, since college tends to be pretty expensive, many, not all, but many of those 18 to 21 year olds come from fairly well-to-do families. And so their college towns tend to have fairly high income levels. And with that comes the sorts of demands for goods and services that high income types of people have.
I know you, in your work, you look at the idea pioneered by urban studies theorist Richard Florida. That's also a component of college towns. Tell us about that.
That certainly is. So there's a lot of what Richard Florida has done, and I don't want to try to summarize all of it. But what he observes is that the nature of the economy has changed in the last certainly 100 or 120 years. And what he observed was the rise of a group of professions that involve mainly working with your mind rather than working with your hands or working with your body. Academics are certainly within that group. They're not the only people who are in that group. It's a pretty broad class. But so what you have is a group of people who are doing non-routine problem-solving kind of work. What Florida does is spend some time characterizing those people, the sorts of things that they're interested in. One can quibble a little bit around the edges with his characterizations, but basically, the sorts of things that highly educated people are interested in, and particularly young highly educated people and highly creative people are interested in. They tend to be tolerant people. They tend to be include a greater fraction of people who are from who are non-native, non-American foreigners, so people foreign-born. And things like that. And so college towns, I think, tend to be more international, a little bit more cosmopolitan in that sense of the word, that you see a broader mix of restaurants and things that you might not find in a similar town that had a population that was different.
John Solo, can a college town do planning further out? Because it is, in a sense, insulated, isolated from the economic ups and downs that a town that relies on private industry, does it not?
They tend to be, I think. This is the growing part of the economy. Excuse me. And since the trend over time is moving in that direction, since 100 years ago, much greater fraction of the population was involved in growing the food that we survive on. Now that's a much smaller fraction. Then there was manufacturing, and a lot of that is done in Mexico and China these days. Increasingly, not completely, but increasingly, we have people who are doing, as I say, these creative types of occupations. That certainly has an impact on this. That, to the extent that those jobs tend to be less prone to the the ups and downs of the business cycle, college towns can weather the storm a little bit better.
Blake Gumprecht joining us by phone. I know you have to go. I want to give you the last word in at least this segment here. Any words to the future of college towns, trends we may be looking for in the coming decades?
Well, you know, something we read about a lot in the newspaper these days is about this sort of rapid expansion of online education. And, you know, so that raises the obvious question of how might that impact college towns. I mean, people have actually for quite a long time been predicting the demise of the bricks and mortar university, which would, of course, mean the end of the college town as well. But the sort of groundswell of support for online education I've noticed just within the last couple of 3 years seems to be growing rapidly. So if more and more people take their classes online, what impact will that have on college towns? I don't know that I have an answer. I kind of resist the attempt to predict because whenever I do, I'm wrong. But
okay. Well, we'll have to leave it at the question for now. Blake Gumprecht, thank you for joining us, author of The American College Town. When we come back, we'll talk more about the unique quality of college towns. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about college towns, what goes into making a great college town, what sets them apart from other communities without colleges, and what special challenges do they face? How have they changed? Questions we're looking at this hour. And recently, the American Institute of Economics Research's College Destination Index compiled its annual list of the best college and cities and towns in the U.S. In the top five in the college town category were Iowa City and Ames. Ames at number two, Iowa City at number four. So we're asking you to chip in to our conversation. Have you ever had an experience and said to yourself, only in a college town could that happen? Tell us about that experience. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us, we have today with us from our first half hour, John Solo, Department Executive Officer, Professor in the Department of Economics at the University of Iowa. Talking about earlier in the hour, John Solo, about the economic differences that the college towns faces with others. A question, Mike in Des Moines had this question. He dropped off our line, but this was his question. He asked, because there are more highly educated population in college towns, do people with advanced degrees make less money in college towns than non-college towns?
It's a really interesting question. I think the answer is no, although you have to be a little bit careful to compare apples to apples. But the people who study this note that there are complementarities between people who have highly, you know, who are highly educated and have these sorts of skills. If having too many doctors in one town meant that doctors' wages were lower, you think that where doctors would get paid a whole lot would be in the smaller parts of the country, or even in India and Africa. And it doesn't actually work that way. Doctors in India and Africa want to come to the United States, to New York, to practice, where there are all sorts of doctors. And the reason that economists suggest is that having more people with complementary skills to your own actually makes you more productive, not less productive.
Interesting. John Solo, I know you have to slip out. We want to thank you for joining us for most of this hour. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm going to answer your question, what something that only happens in a college town.
Okay.
Several hundred 18 to 21-year-olds running through the streets with very little clothing on for a good cause. That's something that you just don't see outside of college.
This is a comment, not so delicately put, that I have heard from others as well.
Yeah. Only in a college town. That's what makes it such a great place to live. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. John Solo of the University of Iowa's Department of Economics, a professor in that department. We want to go to representatives of the towns we're talking about today and join joining us from our Ames studio, Neela Lawrence Benson, a resident of Ames and Iowa State University graduate. Neela, hi. Welcome to our program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Now, you serve on numerous boards, committees, lots of connections that you make, and you work in that capacity between Ames, the city, and Iowa State University. You're a University of Iowa State University graduate, and as we just pointed out in this survey, in this index, Ames ranked number two in this category of college towns, the the category of 250,000 residents or less. So if I don't know Ames, if I've never been to Ames, Neela, tell me, in a nutshell, what will I find there?
Well, you'll find a lot of cooperation between the city and the university, which to me is the secret of being a good college community. Could I give you a couple of examples?
Absolutely.
Okay, first of all, our award-winning public transportation system called SciRide is funded by the Ames City Government and Iowa State University. In 2010, we opened the Furman Aquatic Center, which was built with an $8,488,000 bond issue. And Iowa State extended a long-term lease of land for the center so it could be built there. If the university had not done that, the aquatic center would have cost significantly more.
If you are a longtime resident of Ames, these are wonderful attributes you just listed, but if Ames were a person, how would you describe that person?
I'd say very warm, outgoing, friendly.
Any attributes of Ames that you wish would change in the future?
Well, I think part of what maybe some of the not-so-pleasant aspects have already been mentioned, such as different lifestyles between students and townspeople, loud parties, disrespect for property, that type of thing. And there is the ongoing concern about where student housing should be located. But those things seem to go with colleges and universities, and that just goes with the territory, I think. I think, at least in Ames, the advantages definitely outweigh the disadvantages.
Is it a good community for older folks to grow old in?
It is a great community for older folks to retire in. In fact, several magazines have listed Ames as one of the top retirement cities in the nation also. So I think it's what more can we ask? We have a good climate for older people and an equally good climate for university students.
Neela Lawrence Benson with us, a big booster of Ames, the number two on the College Town College Destination Index as compiled by the American Institute of Economic Research's College Destination Index. We want to introduce also in our conversation, Russ Behrens is with us, a city manager of Grinnell, Iowa, formerly city manager of Humboldt, Iowa, in the north central part of the state. We're fitting in Russ and Grinnell because Grinnell was named one of the best college towns in North America in a 2012 ranking by MSN.com. Russ Behrens in our Iowa City studio. Hi, Russ.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Now, how would you answer that question? Introduce us to Grinnell, someone who knows nothing about it.
Well, what kind of, I guess, person Grinnell would be? It'd be a really diverse, interesting person. Having lived in other rural Iowa communities, you know, Carroll, Spencer, Humboldt, both my degrees are from Ames. You know, living in a community like that, the college adds a certain vitality. The faculty brings quite a bit of intellectual capital. You know, and from my perspective as city manager, I always have another committed community partner to help advance projects in the community.
How does that change your life, your job, your challenges when you switched from city manager of Humboldt to Grinnell and added the element of having a significant presence by the college?
Well, it certainly makes my job more interesting. I think in the long run, it makes it easier. There are certain challenges that come with working in a college community, but the benefits far outweigh any disadvantages. We've spent a lot of effort revitalizing our downtown, and with the college campus located immediately adjacent to it, they have a vested interest in improving that too. So, in addition to that intellectual capital, the students and faculty are customers. The college is a contributor to the public works improvements project. So, like I said, it's almost like having another. Almost like having another level of government within that local government that's there, and you both have the same mission and generally want to get to the same place.
Mm-hmm. Unlike Iowa City and Ames, of course, Grinnell, a smaller community, but also Grinnell, the site of Grinnell College, which is a private college, not a public university or land-grant university. How does that change things?
Yeah, and to put that in perspective for people, you know, we're a town of about 9,200 people. The college has 1,600 students. They employ 600 people. So you can can see that that's clearly a huge influence on what's really a relatively small rural community. You know, we were talking about the economics piece before, and one good example of how that clearly impacts us in a positive way is we're often referred to as being somewhat recession-proof because of that. Because of Grinnell College, if the college were to fail, something catastrophic has happened, clearly. So, you know, our bond ratings are always stronger because of the presence of the college, and then the next piece being, you know, the strong agricultural sector that Iowa's experienced. So that's a clear example.
Russ Barron's with us, city manager of Grinnell. Let's go to our phones. A number of people want to get in on our conversation. Maureen in Coralville, you've been listening. What do you have to chip in?
Hi there. This has been a great program to listen to, and my husband and I are Iowa City graduates in the 70s, and we have spent most of our careers in the state of Illinois in education, and we have chosen to retire in the Iowa City area.
What do you find attractive for retirees in the Iowa City Coralville area?
Well, first of all, the arts scene is so much more vital than in towns that size. Other towns that size, more festivals, the writing workshops, they offer them all summer long for anyone who's very interested in the writing program. Of course, University of Iowa is known for their writing program, the writer's workshop. And as educators, that really appeals to us, as well as the park system. We really enjoy the bike trails, the walking trails, and the parks.
Sounds like, Maureen, you're pointing to a lot of advantages that bigger cities have in the cultural aspects, but not dealing with too much in the way of traffic jams, I don't imagine, in Coralville.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And Coralville's very – it's the bedroom community of Iowa City, and it's just so easy access to the downtown area that we love to enjoy.
Maureen, thank you for your input. 1-866-780-9100. Maureen calling from Coralville. Let's skip over to someone who's in transit. David, I have you listed as somewhere on I-80. I hope you're talking safely on your mobile phone. Are you still there, David?
Yes, I am. I just wanted two comments. One, a number of years ago, I was in London, and in the underground there were posters for an art exhibit at the Royal Academy of Arts. So I went to the exhibit, and I was from Iowa, and saw that the exhibit was being put on by the Royal Academy of Arts and the University of Iowa, their art gallery. I was just blown away. It was just awesome that, and then it was showing at the University of Iowa when I came back, so I went to it at both places. But something like that illustrates what Iowa City is. It has world-class art, as has been mentioned, that something that could be shared between Iowa City and London. That was just amazing.
Oh, that is – yeah, go ahead, David.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, the other comment is that I'm from Colorado originally, and my parents live in the Aspen area, and I also lived in Steamboat Springs. But I found out about college towns, Madison, Ames, Iowa City, that they're just like resort towns. You take Santa Fe, you take Aspen, Steamboat Springs, Taos. Resort towns have so many of the similarities to college towns, which is why in Iowa I love the college towns, because they have world-class food, world-class art, but also they have all the problems, the disparity in wealth, the seasonal transient workers, the people that move there for a few years and party and ski or whatever the, you know, local resort is, and then they move away. So it's very, very similar. Resort towns and college towns are almost the same.
David, thank you for those two keen observations. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
David, joining our conversation. Let's go to Matt Starnes, another guest we have today, joining us toward the end of our show. Matt, welcome to our program. You are a junior at the University of Iowa, majoring in journalism and French. You're a freelancer for the student newspaper, I understand.
Correct, yeah.
The Daily Iowan. But interesting in your bio is that you grew up in the St. Paul, Minneapolis area. Also an area highly ranked in the rankings that we've been talking about, the American Institute of Economic Research's Index of College and University Communities. So you could compare, say, Iowa City to the Twin Cities area.
I suppose I could, yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, go ahead and do that in terms of quality of life for you, having lived in both places.
Sure, sure. Well, I grew up in St. Paul, like you said, and St. Paul was a very sort of quiet community for me. There are certainly the seedy areas of larger cities like that, but I grew up right between the University of St. Thomas and McAllister, which is a liberal arts school up there, and it struck me that coming here to the University of Iowa is certainly a larger school, although we do have the University of Minnesota right next door, and there was a lot of I'm trying to think here. The partying is something that I hadn't really experienced to the extent where I grew up.
Oh, really? Iowa City, you'd say there's a greater party atmosphere than—
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that happens because the downtown is so concentrated. There, you know, all the bars are in one place. You walk downtown on a Friday night and you see just an incredible number of people out there, and it certainly looks like they're having fun.
Do you put that in the plus column or the minus column?
Well, it depends. You know, you mentioned earlier you were trying to have the guests describe the what kind of person the town would be.
Sure.
And
I think
Iowa City would be a fit, hardworking person with a mullet. I think the mullet generally is characterized by you have a business in the front, party in the back kind of lifestyle that you're living in. I see a lot of people who work very, very hard during the week. They're up till 2-3 in the morning doing homework, go to the fitness center almost every day, and then on the weekends they're downtown.
Uh-huh. Okay. So I want to turn to our city manager of Grinnell. We didn't talk to you, Russ Behrens, about student behavior. Is that different in Grinnell? Because it is a private college, a little bit smaller than the University of Iowa or Iowa State University?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm familiar with McAllister, and they are very different. And I don't want to sugarcoat it and say we don't deal with some of those same issues, but the academic rigors of Grinnell College are such that these students just don't have as much time to do that. And then on top of that, they really work hard to try to keep a lot of that activity on campus. And it's easier to manage in that smaller setting than it would be, say, at the University of Iowa. And certainly we deal with some of the same issues, not claiming we don't, but having experienced both settings, I would say they are completely different, yes.
Neela Lawrence Benson, a resident of Ames, longtime resident of Ames, ISU graduate. I wonder, since you have several decades to look back on Ames, you can see it through a longer view. Would you point to any significant changes in students or student life over the decades that you've observed?
Well, one change I've noticed, which is definitely a plus, is that students are much more actively volunteering for good causes, whether it is with their fraternity and sorority, their dorm floor, their departmental club, or just on their own. In Ames, at least, they are a big part of our volunteer force, and that is really very gratifying to me.
Mm, okay. Any other changes that you've noticed?
Well, definitely lots bigger, more traffic, more people around. I've noticed in the summers, even though we have a fairly good-sized enrollment at summer school, that it is a much more relaxed city. Mm-hmm. And part of that's kind of nice, but it's always exciting mid-August when everyone starts coming back.
Yes, it is. If you lived in a college town, you know that feeling of at the end of the semester, the sigh of relief by the people staying in the town. Of course, the students are sighing relief because they are done with their semester, but the people in the town are sighing relief and saying it is going to be a little bit quieter for whatever length of time.
But then it's always fun when they come back.
Right. It's sort of a seasonal progression. Let's go to Darren, who is in Iowa City. Hi, Darren.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Darren, please chip in. What's on your mind?
Sure. I was fortunate enough to, in the late 80s, early 90s, attend both the University of Iowa and Iowa State. And so I have a perspective of both schools. And the one thing that doesn't surprise me is that Iowa State does rank a little higher from my perspective for the simple reason that when I was there, I truly felt like I was really more in a college atmosphere. The campus is such a good example of a real collegiate collective of, the buildings, and it's a true campus, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas the University of Iowa, it's intermingled with downtown, which, of course, has some positives with that. But I enjoyed the atmosphere at Iowa State more for that particular reason.
Mm, interesting. Very different.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
So it's interesting. Anybody who knows Iowa City and Ames know they have very different characters. And in Grinnell, you're in the middle of it, Russ Behrens. You're acquainted with both of them, too. And all three towns have a big difference in character.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. You know, having attended Iowa State for both my undergraduate and graduate, you know, I agree that it has one of the most wonderful campuses, you know, of course, designed by Frederick Law Olmsted. And I think Iowa City probably occurred more organically, I guess, and just kind of developed as it needed to and has a much more urban setting. I mean, there's no question Iowa State is a perfect example of a land-grant institution, and Iowa's clearly different. Maybe I would have had more fun going to Iowa, but I agree. I love that. I love the campus atmosphere that Iowa State offers.
Okay. Let's go to what will be our final caller, Bill in Sac City. Hi, Bill.
Oh, hi, Ben, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. We've got just a couple minutes left. Do you have a memory or an observation to make?
Just a memory and an observation. I went to college at the University of Iowa in the late 60s and early 70s, and one evening on my way to the histology science lab in the spring of 1971, I watched a fairly destructive anti-Vietnam War demonstration, and then only in a college town could you then go and study in a science lab after watching that type of demonstration and not even be aware of anything that was happening. And my point is that there's just great contrast in a big university town, especially like Iowa City.
Mm, interesting, Bill. Thank you for that observation from Sac City. Neela, can you tell us a little bit about ISU being the site of protests over the years?
There have been some through the years. I remember one Visha parade that was kind of disrupted by some protesters. But mm-hmm. My husband was in the National Guard at the time of the riot that the previous caller just spoke of, and I remember that very clearly.
Mm-hmm. Matt Starnes, a junior at the University of Iowa now currently, when you hear stories of protests in the 60s and 70s at the University of Iowa, does that make you feel like the students to date have that in them for better or for worse still or not?
I think so, yeah. And I, as a reporter for the Daily Iowan, I covered a couple of anti-war protests that went on and then also did some work for a class covering the Trayvon Martin march that happened on the Ped Mall there last year. I don't know if that rings a bell for you, but it was
sure.
I've seen a lot of potential, more than just protesting, for doing good within the student body, especially with the Dance Marathon, which is just a huge fundraising opportunity for the University of Iowa. And a lot of my friends, a lot of people around the university participate in it. It's really incredible.
Russ Behrens, very quickly, it was mentioned in our first half hour about so much education going online here. Is that a concern? Do you hear that discussed in Grinnell, that perhaps the physicality, the geography, being at a college is becoming less important?
Well, that's certainly an interesting question for Grinnell College, because Grinnell College has traditional college students, you know, 18 to 22-year-old for the most part. You know, they, although they certainly have programs all over the world, you know, that is not a venue that they have ventured into. And I tend to agree with John when he was here and brought up that, you know, I think the online programs are a great option for people. I don't see it impacting at least us in the next 50 years that negatively.
Russ Behrens, city manager of Grinnell College, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Matt Starnes, a student at the University of Iowa, thank you for your observations.
Thanks.
And, of course, Neela Lawrence Benson in Ames, thank you for talking about your city, Ames.
You're very welcome.
River to River is produced by Sarah Bowden, Emily Woodbury, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. In Ames, we had help from Garrett Van Leeuwen. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.